Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
The Seattle Mariners are two games back of Boston with two games to play against Boston. And guess what? They won the series opener. A fantastic outing, especially for Mitch Haniger, J.P. Crawford, and Logan Gilbert. Joining us now to talk about all of it is Scott Servais for the Scott Servais Show. Hey, Skip, how are you?
Doing great. How are you guys today?
Fantastic. Jake is very excited to go to the game tonight. Curtis and I are going tomorrow. We're getting lots of really excited responses from fans that are just so ecstatic to see where the Mariners are right now. I mean, talk about the feeling just in the clubhouse after last night's win.
Well, certainly it was a big game last night, and the way we won it with the huge Haniger home run and how well Logan Gilbert pitched, it was big shot in the arm for us. We didn't play as well as we would have liked to over the weekend, but understanding the importance of these games with the Red Sox, it was great to get off to a good start in the series. And they got a really good team. They got a lot of experience over there, and we'll have our hands full tonight as well.
Scott, what was it like? You've been with Mitch for a few years now, and I'm not quite of the camp that another reporter is. I don't think he's a robot, but I do think that he can be pretty stoic out there. And to see kind of the emotion and the smile on his face as he hit that home run last night, what was that like for you?
Oh, it's super gratifying. I think when you see players, you know, they put so much time and effort, and certainly what Haney has had to, you know, overcome in the last year and a half being away from the game, and then to kind of see it kind of come to a head and you know, kind of getting rewarded for all the effort and the hard work they put in. It's just super exciting. And certainly when he cracks a smile, you know, it means a lot to him because he does take it so seriously. But he was pumped up last night, as he should have been.
Skip, Haniger, obviously, he's so incredibly talented. He's been great for you guys all year. He's in the second half of the season, he's kind of gone in waves in terms of, you know, the slumps and the success. But last night he's 4 for 4, hits 3 singles, then he gets that monster home run. When he's at his best, what is he like at the plate? What do you notice from him?
I think, like all of our guys, Mitch, not a whole lot different than the fact that when he's swinging at the right pitches, he's really tough to get out. And that sounds easy. It's hard to do, you know, because your timing's got to be right. You're seeing the ball good. You have a good idea where the outside corner is at and, you know, what to swing at or what you can handle and what you have to lay off of. So it's really the name of the game, and I talk about it all the time. But you see it just play out day in and day out, their ability, our ability to control the strike zone. If we're consistent doing that, you know, our players usually hit a little bit better. We certainly pitch a lot better when we do that. It's so important to anybody in this game, and nothing more important to our team this year. It's just been, when we're good, that's what we're doing.
Logan Gilbert, another one of those guys that doesn't show a ton of emotion, seems very, very low-key, very chill, but he showed a little bit on the mound last night, fanning 9 through 6. It was just a spectacular performance from him. What'd you think of that?
It really was, you know, just from his mound presence and how he just went after him early in the ball game. You know, I think he struck a couple guys out in the first inning, and that starting pitcher just sets the tone for the rest of the game. When he comes out firing like that with, you know, showing that kind of confidence, he had the secondary pitches going last night. You know, we're going to be in a really good ball game. It sets the tone for our offense, how we play defensively, and he kept it up throughout the whole game. I know, you know, the sixth inning, critical, he could somehow get through that inning. He made some huge pitches, and then we could turn it over to our bullpen after that. So heck of an outing by him, and he's learned so much this year. And getting an opportunity to pitch in these important games against a team like the Red Sox here, you know, in mid-September really means something. That's such a valuable experience for our young players. Certainly Logan will take and take a lot from that, you know, and the success he had last night.
Scott, as I think you know, we all kind of manage along with you, and I like to think I've got a good...
No, that doesn't happen. Come on, Shannon. That's the beauty of the game. Everybody's going to manage with it. That's fun. But
well,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
I try to think like you, and I have an idea of where you're going to go with the bullpen and which pocket and which bucket of relievers and pocket of hitters and everything that you're going to go with. And first game of a series, we know you like to go for it all in that. And I was a little surprised last night that nobody was up in the fifth inning and that you went to Logan in the sixth. And it shouldn't have surprised me, maybe, but it just seems like there's almost a different level of trust with him. What do you see with him out there in keeping him out there?
Certainly, you know, I often talk about, you know, you have to watch the game, and, you know, all managers today rely so heavily on the data and the numbers, but ultimately, you have to watch the game. And I just thought Logan was just in so control of that game, and they were so uncomfortable against him. You know, he had the strikeouts going. I just didn't really think they were on him. I mean, a couple of their players were. You know, Bogarts, I think, led off the sixth with a double, and thinking, okay, can they get him? But, you know, looking at the options and who was coming up next, I still thought Logan had plenty of gas left in the tank. And, again, it was an opportunity for him to grow. And even if he didn't get out of that inning, and say he had given up a run, he's going to learn a ton from it by leaving him out there. And there's some nights you don't leave him out there because, you know what, he doesn't look so great, or they are on him. You know, and maybe he's gotten through five innings, but they've hit some balls hard, and he just wasn't as sharp. So it ultimately comes down, you just got to watch the game and then trust your players. And I thought last night was a big, you know, growing moment. And Logan took advantage of it and really helped us out, obviously propelling us to help win the ball game.
Skip, you've done such a great job with this group all year. Honestly, I know you're not going to say anything about it, but I think that you should be in the front running of Manager of the Year. And with those decisions, you've been great all year long with the bullpen. How great does it feel to have three guys now with Castillo coming off of the 10-day IL and looking great with Castillo, Sewald, and Steckenrider at the back end of your bullpen?
Oh, certainly. I said it about 10 days or 2 weeks ago. I thought it was the deepest our bullpen had been at any point in the season. Certainly what Sewald's done, Steckenrider's been phenomenal. Picking up Diego Castillo and having him back healthy. But it's the other guys that really make a difference as well. We talk about what Casey Sadler's been able to do. Anthony Misevich, Joe Smith, you know, Sheffield's chipped in. Eric Swanson's been very sharp. We pick up a veteran like Doolittle. And then I'm not even talking about Johan Ramirez. So I've got about eight or nine deep there in a really good bullpen, and that's what it takes. You can't just lean on the same guys every night. Certainly we try to best we can if they're healthy or if they're feeling fresh, but it really is it's a collective group down there that has really come together, and they've been the anchor of our team all year long. There's no question about it.
Scott, the team put out a video of the YouTube game that was on a few days ago. I don't know if you were able to see it, but they clipped together. Cal Raleigh was mic'd up for it, and they clipped together all of his clips. And there's some Logan Gilbert in there as well. Who would you like to see mic'd up, and who do you think would be most entertaining if we did that?
First of all, I did see that, Shannon, and I heard more words out of Cal Raleigh and Logan Gilbert in that clip than I probably heard in this clubhouse. So they certainly knew the mic was on them. I thought it was well done, and they had a good time with it. But, you know, looking at some of the different guys, I think that, you know, the guy would be some kind of interesting to put a mic on is Tom Murphy. Unfortunately, I think a lot of it would have to be beeped out. You know, it'd have to be on time delay for sure. But Murph, the intensity that Murph brings, I think our fan base would absolutely love it. I just don't know how clean it would be.
Skip, I got to give you a hard time here. I know you're a football fan. You're in Seattle, but you're a diehard Green Bay Packers fan.
You
I
knew
mean,
it was coming, Skip.
What the heck happened to your day. Packers and Aaron Rodgers? What's going on?
You know, it's week one. It wasn't great. I didn't see the game. Obviously, I was busy, but I did see a few highlights, and it was ugly. So there's only one way to go.
Well,
got to go up. There wasn't many highlights. There's interceptions and everything else. But fortunately for us, the Seahawks off to a great start. Their offense looks awesome, and looks like Russ is going to be cooking again this year.
Tyler Anderson on the mound for you guys tonight, just kind of looking ahead in the series a little bit. What would you love to see from him?
Kind of what he's done since we've acquired him. You know, he's a pitch maker. He has a really good plan when he goes out there. You know, he leans heavily on the cutter, the changeup, the location of his fastball. He goes back and forth and really works to hitters' weaknesses based on what he has that day. So what he's been able to do is just keep us in the ball game and give us a chance. He's been very consistent. You know, it's usually five or six innings every time out there by mixing up his stuff, and that's what we're going to need from him tonight. You know, keep us in the game. I thought our offensive at-bats last night were really, really good early in the ball game, and it was a good sign for us. That's what it's going to take. You need to put constant pressure on the opposition every inning. And you may not score in every inning, but just make it tough for the opposing starter every inning. I thought we did a nice job with that last night. And, you know, we need Tyler to get off to a good start in this ball game. Hopefully hold him down for a couple innings, let our offense get going, and then see where it takes us from there.
Skip, I've been so impressed with Abraham Toro this whole time. I mean, what an addition to your guys' club. He just finds a way to get on base, and he's been so consistent for you guys. What does he bring to the table, or what has he brought to the table that's just been a nice boost to your guys' club?
He really helps us balance our lineup a little bit more, and certainly lengthens it. His bat-to-ball skills are elite. This guy does not swing and miss very much at all. He's a really good contact guy. He's hit a few home runs for us, some critical home runs for sure. But the thing that looks, he knows the strike zone so well. He doesn't chase a lot, but he puts the ball in play. And it sounds simple. Why doesn't everybody do that? He's got a really short swing. It really helps that he's a switch hitter. That's where the balance comes, and he brings to our lineup, putting him right in the middle. It doesn't matter how they go with their bullpen, right or left. He's always going to be in a good spot there. So it's been great fit for us for this year. And it's going to be an even greater fit going forward, knowing that he's still a young player. This guy's 24 years old. And, we put him at a new position. He hasn't played that much second base in his career, and he's worked his tail off there to try to get more comfortable working with Perry Hill every day. And, he's done a really nice job for us on both sides of the ball. And we wouldn't be in this spot without him. We needed to boost offensively at the trade deadline, and he's certainly given it to us.
Paul Sewald has been just nails for you guys. And then in the last two, three outings, has had a couple mistakes, and overall it didn't end up costing you guys, but still just kind of we're not used to as viewers seeing that from him. I know that your faith isn't shaken at all in him or the rest of your bullpen, but just so we know, what have been maybe some patterns or any kind of thing that's happened with those home runs that he has given up?
Yeah, I think, we certainly have used Paul a lot, and I think he was maybe, getting gassed a little bit, before last night's game. I think he had 3 days off, and I thought he looked really sharp last night, other than the fact that he's not quite locating the fastball as precisely as he was early on. He's so good at getting that ball up. He's had a very deceptive delivery. The hitters don't pick the ball up on him, and then he kind of rides that fastball up at the top edge of the strike zone. And, he got one down to Devers last night, and it's not where you want to go against Devers. He's a really good low ball hitter. And so it's more of a location thing than anything else. His slider's certainly been really effective, and he'll continue to mix that in there. But the location of the fastball is what got him a little bit. And, again, it happens. I mean, the guys in the other dugout, they get paid, too. They're
right,
really good.
Right.
And they know there's more information about what Paul's doing and how he's doing it now. So the hitters go up there with a pretty good idea, and they're trying to get the ball in their zone. And unfortunately, he didn't get the ball quite high enough last night in the strike zone or just above it to get those guys out, and they jumped him. I will say that he got us three outs at a critical point in the game. And after giving up the back-to-back home runs, you just got to keep pitching, and that's what he did, and we ended up winning the game because of it. So I was glad we had the little cushion. We needed it last night, but Paul's been great all year, and we're going to continue to lean on him here down the stretch. There's no question.
He is Scott Servais, joins us every Tuesday for the Scott Servais Show. Skip, it's a huge series for you guys. We're going to have fun watching. Wish you guys all the best tonight, and it pains me to say this. I do wish the best for your Packers. As long as he's not playing the Seahawks, Rodgers is pretty fun to watch.
No, it sounds good, guys. I look forward to seeing you guys out at the ballpark, and hopefully you bring many, many fans with you.
We can't wait.
Thanks, Skip.
Thanks, Skip. All right, Shannon, I'm going to start with obviously a lot to get to, including just how important this series is. But his comments about the bullpen, you said it's a collective group that's really come together. They have been phenomenal, probably the most consistent part of this team. And it's with so many guys that most fans probably couldn't tell you much about to start the season. I mean, is that easily the part of this team that's surprised you pleasantly the most?
Oh, absolutely. And they've also been the most consistent part of this team, and they have done it with different personnel throughout the season, which has been so remarkable. So the thing that I always wonder when you look at this bullpen is because you've got so many different guys from so many different places. You've got, Sewald minor league sign and started the season at the alternate site and was kind of signed to basically be the long reliever for this team if he made the team in the first place. And all of a sudden he's your leverage guy or your closer. They don't really have a closer, but Drew Steckenrider, same thing. He kind of emerges at a little bit after Paul Sewald does. And what kind of impressed me is they went after guys that had some experience, maybe not a ton, so that when they did throw them out in those situations, they weren't overwhelmed by it. But then you've got other guys who kind of come in and surprise a little bit as well. And what I kind of wonder about all of this is we know that a lot of the times when they bring a reliever over, they'll look at them, they'll sit them down with the analysts and say, hey, you're doing great with this, but if you did more of this, and we've broken it down that this is where you have the most success, you're going to have more success. And I had a player tell me, I think it was back in May, that, you know, they were kind of sitting around and a couple of them and saying that, hey, they're giving us the cheat sheet, basically. And they were buying into that. So there's been a good amount of buy-in in using those analytics. They throw a lot of strikes. They're not afraid to go after hitters. That's played into it as well. And I'm wondering how repeatable this formula is.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I actually did this with Curtis, because in you know, our pre-production meeting is just close your eyes and imagine the bullpen they have now, and then insert Ken Giles and insert Andres Munoz. And, you know, some, you just start to get excited about the quality of the bullpen that can happen next year. And you're seeing Sewald, and as great as he's been, he's starting to get hit a little bit. And again, these are some of the best hitters in baseball, so there's a little give and take there. But is there an element of him getting figured out? Is there an element of the scouting report being clear on him?
Probably a little bit, but I think that Scott was right on when he did say that he was missing. You know, we talk all about the slider, but the ride on that fastball is a big difference maker with him. And
right.
That's where that is something that he has learned about himself and how that pitch plays. And so there was a mistake pitch there. And I think that a couple of days ago we saw a home run too. I think that there has been an element of fatigue. He's been used quite a bit since he came up. So, yes, they have a scouting report, but I also think that he could have hit his spots better there.
I meant to bring it up with Scott. I didn't. But there's plenty to talk about Jared Kelnick, too, for which you've cautioned, like, well, wait a minute, when you kind of isolate some of the numbers, he's had a little bit of a better stretch. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Yeah, September has actually been pretty strong for him in relation to the rest of the team and in relation to some of the lows that he has had. I think he has kind of come around where he's kind of figuring things out again. I can think back to, I think, 3 weeks ago we were talking about he's a tinkerer, and that's something that, you know, to keep an eye on. You don't want to be changing things every time something goes wrong. And it seems like he might be on a little bit of an upward track. Regardless, he's learned a lot in the last month. And I don't think there's much of a way around it right now with the pitching that you have in the big leagues. And you're not going to get that in the minor leagues. And he's got to be up and he's got to be kind of going through these things. So it's really encouraging that he's getting his eyes on this pitching and that he's making adjustments, not so much in his swing, but a little bit more in his approach and what to look for and what he is going to swing at. And I do think that you are seeing forward progress on that. And we are also starting to see a little bit more, and cross your fingers on this, just the ridiculous power that he has.
Right. And that's something that stood out. And the one thing that I know in baseball, you can't be crazy emotional. And that's something that Jared Kelnick's learning, and obviously super competitive. But I just loved one of his at-bats yesterday. I can't remember if it was his first or his second at-bat. And he's in the battle with the pitcher. He's taken him over 10. And he is sitting there fouling him off, and he is yelling. He is just so into the at-bat, and there's an element of that that I just love. But I know he can't be that guy at every single at-bat, but the competitiveness that he has is something that endears me to him a little bit, and I hope that eventually he can – I just imagine this guy being successful with that competitive, fiery energy for this young club, how fun that will be. But do you, as you're watching him, and you mentioned some of that, is that something that is popping up because he's confident, or is it popping up the competitiveness, I mean, because he is frustrated with where he's at?
No, I think that's just him. There's always going to be that, and there are going to be times when he's frustrated with the umpire. There are going to be times when he's frustrated with himself. And that at bat, he missed a pitch in the middle of the plate. And he was fouling off a couple of pitches that he probably could have put in play. And I think that that is the emotion that you were seeing right there. And I think, you know, kind of the bright spot in this, I don't think it's going to be too long before he's missing far fewer of those pitches. I think, you know, he's getting those pitches and he's getting bad on them. He's going to start squaring them up a little bit. But, you know, I think the thing that I worry about the most, and I don't see, it's nothing like the first time he came up where every strikeout was the end of the world. And I think he does understand that. I think that he just needs to keep an eye a little bit more on just how demonstrative he is when the umpires are in play with this. And
yes,
it doesn't even mean just, you know, don't turn around and yell at him, but be careful about, you know, so much of old baseball is gone, but this is one that still very much lives. Is you've got to honor the umpire. You cannot show them up and not even come close to that, especially when you are a rookie. If you do that, there's a chance that you're not going to get the closer calls. And I'm not saying that the umpires are going to be spiteful about it. It's just going to happen. And so it's, I don't think that benefits him to kind of have that at the plate.
A little more lighthearted one here. Did his answer about Tom Murphy being who he'd choose for Mic'd Up surprise you? Was there someone else you were thinking? A lot of people on the text line were saying JP.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know where he was going to go. So that did surprise me that that was the first place that he went with that. And then I was wondering, would that be on a day he's catching or a day that he's not catching and he's sitting
back
there?
You might get a different version.
Right, right. So I was kind of interested in that right there, too.
Well, and especially with the fact that you know Kyle Seager is such a talker. Ty France seems to be quite the talker
at
first.
I want Ty France mic'd up, but just when he's rounding the bases and talking to the base coaches. Like, that's what I want, and the players there, and the position players. That's the Ty France mic'd up I want to hear. Just
Shannon,
how's your day?
Yeah, Shannon, we've got the series. It's huge. It's vital. It almost, at this point, the Mariners are in a position where they got zero room for error. Tyler Anderson is on the mound tonight. What do they have to do to get this win?
Well, we've been saying this for a while. Some runs would be really great.
Oh, man.
That
would be fantastic.
You know, more runs with regularity. I'm all for that. And I mean, you know, when it all of a sudden turned into a one-run game last night, well, of course it did. But, you know, the bullpen is pretty fresh right now, and they have the off day coming up on Thursday, so it's not as critical. They know how to play the one-run games, but it would be great to see that offense anyway. You know, there's a lot on the other side, and Boston has been struggling. I think they are 4-6 in their last 10, so try and take advantage there as much as you can. But I'm really interested to see, because I've said all along that if they're going to win it, this is how they're going to do it. It's going to be a different hero every night, and it could be anybody that's on the roster because that's how they do it. But I'm really, really interested to see if maybe we do see somebody start stepping up and caring. Is Mitch Haniger starting to go on that path right now? Perhaps even Jared Kelnick is starting to go on that path a little bit more. Tom Murphy, we've seen it as well. So I'm interested to see if that if they take that and are able to kind of run with that.
All right, if you missed the Scott Servais show, that kicks off hour three of the Jake and Stacey podcast. You can listen to that wherever you download your podcasts. Also, Shannon Dreher, Mariners insider for 710sports.com, joining us. Thank you, Shannon. You can see more from Shannon at Shannon Dreher. She'll obviously have updates from the game, links out to articles, and you can hear on the Mariners pre and post game show. Don't forget, Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday from 6 to 10 a.m., including the Pete Carroll Show each Monday at 9:30. All right, before What I Need to Know, we've got to talk about what's sustainable from week one for the Seahawks, plus some news from Adam Schefter you guys might be interested in. It's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
You guys can get your questions in now for What I Need to Know. Any question you want, text it in. 710-710 Mac and Jack's text line. You don't have to wait until 45 after to do it. You can do it right now. I will be collecting them. I have one bit of news and then one question for this segment, you guys. The first is a bit of news. This from Adam Schefter. Hear me out. There is a wide receiver, free agent, the Seahawks could add. Are you ready for it? The NFLPA determined Josh Gordon has successfully completed his NFL monitored treatment program and has recommended to the NFL that he be reinstated. Gordon is awaiting final approval from NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, but is said to be ready to play and vaccinated. How are you two feeling about Josh Gordon?
Outside of the way you just said that, I think that with Josh Gordon, he is somebody that I root for. I am rooting for him. His personal issues are well documented, and you know, someone that's struggling with own personal addiction. My heart goes out to anybody that deals with that. What I think is going to happen, or what I hope for, is look, if the Seahawks were to sign Josh Gordon, it'd be something that I would be okay with, because I know that the organization knows kind of what they're getting into and how to handle it. But I believe it's time to move on. Like, I don't see the Seahawks bringing back Josh Gordon. They tried twice. You know, they tried to make it work. They like Josh Gordon, the person. It has nothing to do with that. But in terms of his availability and having to worry about it every single week, I think that they're at a stage where they've got enough talent. They don't need to add Josh Gordon to the mix. So I just don't see his return to Seattle being something that is necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not surprising at all to see questions about it. I mean, it's really been like since Gordon was ever first linked to Seattle, people have been wondering. despite the fact that I don't really think they are struggling with wide receiver depth right now. Although, before they got De'Eskridge, I said they didn't have a ton of great wide receiver depth, and right now he's in concussion protocol, so wouldn't the same still be true?
It is true, right? It is true. I think that when you're talking about Josh Gordon, would his talent be welcomed? Of course it would. Of course it would. I mean, it would be great to have him, and just the thought of having Josh Gordon's talent here on this roster would be tremendous. But it's the reality of, will he be here each and every single week? How involved can he be with this offense? Because they have to be cautious, right? They have to be cautious about how involved they get him into the offense, because they don't know if he's actually going to remain with the team all year long, and past history and recent history tells you that that's not going to happen. So I know Josh Gordon personally. I've been able to meet with him. I've thrown with him. Like this is a guy that I really like and I'm really rooting for. I just don't see the Seahawks signing up for a third time with this Josh Gordon experience, because of the fact that I think the confidence is lost that Josh could actually remain with the team all season long.
One person at least, I would imagine, wouldn't mind seeing a back. DK Metcalf tweeting JG return tour.
His teammates, there's never been an issue with Josh Gordon. The person, the teammate here in Seattle, everybody has really liked him. I've heard nothing but good things from other guys about Josh Gordon. I don't know if Pete Carroll and John Schneider want to sign up for that again.
How about this one? I know that we have, you know what, let's get to Seahawks. I'll bring this up in what I need to know. I have a USC update in about 10 minutes. So let's talk about what's sustainable from week one for the Seahawks. We're looking specifically, I think, at defensive line and at the total offense. So let's just look at offense mostly for this guy. But the Seahawks put up 28 points on the Colts, which have been a pretty stout defense. Chris Carson rushes for almost 100 yards. Tyler Lockett hits 100 yards on the dot. DK Metcalf with 60 yards, a touchdown for Metcalf, two touchdowns for Lockett, four touchdowns total on the day for Russell Wilson with no interceptions and a near-perfect passer rating. I don't know if a perfect passer rating is sustainable. It's certainly not. But is this kind of offensive production sustainable for Seattle?
Yes, it is. And there's a few reasons why. Number one, you didn't see this being a lopsided affair, meaning that, you know, Chris Carson runs for 200 yards on the ground, or Russell Wilson, like in the Atlanta game, threw for 300 yards on 35 attempts, and they didn't really run the ball. They didn't really get the run game involved in that game against Atlanta last year. It was solely reliant on the pass game alone. This was well balanced here with Shane Waldron and this version of this offense. The other part of it that I think is sustainable, and last year they got figured out. Last year, halfway through the season, there was clearly an approach and a game plan that was put together with defensive coordinators across the league that found a way to neutralize Russell Wilson and this explosive passing attack, and they never really got the ground game involved enough to really be balanced or to throw people off. With Shane Waldron's system, it's exactly that. It's a well-established system. Brian Schottenheimer didn't have a well-established system or history or background in airing the ball out and throwing the ball over the yard like Andy Reid does in Kansas City. This is what Shane Waldron does, and this is who he's going to be, which means he has the answers for the way people are going to try to combat it. And you know what? They did some positive things in week one. You know what Shane Waldron's thinking? How he's going to use week one to set up what he's going to do in week two and week three and week four. And so that doesn't mean there isn't going to be bumps in the road, but I don't anticipate with this offense and this system that you're going to watch this offense just really fall flat on their face or sputter or really get figured out for an extended period of time, if at all, because the system is so well established, so well balanced, and they can utilize everybody's skill set.
Yeah, I think that that's going to be the real kind of second test. The first test was really just kind of a showcase of what's it going to look like. How are they going to be able to marry what Pete Carroll might want from a run offense and also from a pass, right? He loves play action, the deep passing game and some explosive plays. But how is he going to marry Shane Waldron, these two offensive philosophies? I think you saw a successful version of that. The second, and in my opinion, bigger test is going to be how do you adapt? Because Schottenheimer, that offense did not do it last year. And so I think it's going to be a couple weeks until we figure it out. But I am looking forward to conversations that you and I can have about where do you adapt? What does adapting look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Before we go to break here, I just saw on the text line here people coming at me about my Josh Gordon take about him not being here in Seattle, or I don't think it would be advantageous for him to be here in Seattle. Not because of the talent, but because I just don't think he'll be available through the year. I mean, it's just... unfortunately, that's been the trend, and you have to go with that. People getting on me about how hypocritical I am about wanting Antonio Brown here. My question would be to you is, has Antonio Brown remained on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster? Was he a part of that group through the rest of the year last year? Does he remain on the roster this year? And was he able to contribute? I mean, the first week of the season against Dallas Cowboys, he has over 100 yards receiving. So I would say that he's not only on the roster, but he's an active participant in winning football games. That's the difference.
See, here I was. People were texting in, JG will be a Seahawk. Jake, what are you talking about? I thought they were talking about Jimmy Graham. I mean, I know that both Curtis and I were anticipating
well,
that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Chicago would never let that treasure go. They would never let him walk.
They shouldn't. Underutilizing him, that's what they're doing.
Build a statue for him.
That's exactly right. A life-size one. Who gets into a red zone situation and doesn't put Jimmy Graham out there? I don't know what you're doing.
All right. Losing team.
What I need to know is coming your way next. 710-710. That is where you are sending your questions. We'll turn it over to you guys next.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Driven by CarPros Kia of Tacoma.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get those questions in, you guys. 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. Let's turn to it right now. Let's see. What did you make of KJ Wright's performance last night? I thought he looked pretty good with the Raiders, that is.
He did. He looked good. I mean, the part that remains true is that KJ Wright is a situational player, and he's not going to be on the field for all three downs, and that's exactly how it was with him with the Raiders. But when he got his opportunity to be on the field, he made some plays and was really I was really happy for KJ Wright, and it's not a surprise. It's not a surprise. He's a good football player. He's very instinctual. He's going to be a very good contributor for the Raiders this year, and they're getting one heck of a leader. The thing that did surprise me was the number. You guys see the number? It was throwing me off all night. It's 34.
34? It's very weird.
Like,
it's a running back number.
Yeah, I
yes.
know. Are you a fullback?
I don't know how I feel about that. I love KJ Wright. 34?
Doesn't man, feel right.
Oh, just, I don't know.
What I need to know, which big-name free agent will sign with the Mariners this offseason from Chris and Puyallup?
Big-name free agent?
I want you to, you don't have to like put your name on the line, but who would you love to see the Mariners sign, and then who could you see them realistically getting?
The name that stands out to me the most is Marcus Semien. That would be somebody that I would love to have here in Seattle. He's a versatile guy in terms of the infield. He's a guy that's got a lot of pop, is a veteran presence. So Marcus Semien is the guy that I would say. But who's the pitcher from the Giants? I always
Kevin Gausman.
Yes, Kevin Gausman is somebody that I would also be very interested in to add to that starting rotation next year.
Someone, oh Curtis, what's yours?
Oh, I think my like absolute dream scenario would be Chris Bryant, but I don't think that's happening. I think he could end up back with San Francisco after this season. I mean, look, the Giants are a really good team. Bryant probably wants to play for a contender. He's already there. Why not stick there? But look, if the Mariners want to chill out $30 million plus per year for Chris Bryant, I'd say back up the Brinks truck.
Do you think they will? Not necessarily for
will?
Bryant, but do you think that
for
they
anybody?
Will seriously spend this offseason?
I mean, if you want to increase payroll
to
over $100 million, $140 million, they're at what, about 80 right now?
They're at 80. League average is 130. Obviously,
I mean,
skewed by the Dodgers.
If you want to,
Curtis, let me ask you this question because I know you're a huge fan of this player. What about Javi Baez?
I wouldn't mind that. He gives you flexibility at shortstop and second base. I mean, obviously, he has dropped off his production dramatically since, you know, he was with Chicago. But this is a guy who's a very fiery player. He's certainly not one to hold back when speaking his mind. I would love to see the Mariners go out and make a trade for, like, Cody Bellinger, even though he's been terrible for the Dodgers. He's a former MVP. Like, 2 years ago, he was MVP.
Yeah, but you
and
really
he's been terrible.
You want to pay for past production?
I want to pay for production that still might be there. And when he's young enough, he's like 26, 27 years old.
Okay.
He's been terrible this year, but look, it wasn't that long ago he was one of the best players in baseball and like a franchise cornerstone.
From the 206, what I need to know, a lot has to go right, but let's say the M's do make the wild card game. Who do you start from Aaron in Tacoma?
Who would I start?
Look, if it comes down to, like, needing to win game 162 in order to get to the wild card, it doesn't matter who starts the wild card game because you need game 162. But if the Mariners do find themselves in a position where they can, like, shuffle their rotation around and kind of have their pick of the litter going into the wild card game, I would say Marco right now.
Marco? Okay. I mean, that would be a very safe pick, and I completely understand that. No, it's not. I think it's a good pick. It's a safe pick. I don't know why I feel this way, but gosh, give me some Chris Flexen. Give me Flex. I think that guy has been so darn consistent, and when he's been on, he has been really good.
But when he's been off, he's been really off.
It's true, but he's been more on than off. I mean, I think people underestimate
his
stuff.
Yeah, but his off is like 7 hits, 10 hits. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, but Marco, you could say the same thing about him in the first half.
What about Logan Gilbert?
I mean, he's the guy with the most upside outside of Kikuchi, right?
He's got the best fastball.
I mean, this is a really good debate here because I could see any one of those. I could see the argument for Gilbert, Flexen, or Marco. I think if you want to go safe in the sure thing, Marco would be the guy. Logan Gilbert, if you're thinking, hey, we're gonna throw out our best talent, I think Logan Gilbert would be that guy.
How about this one? Someone said we were talking about Javi Baez, what you'd shell out for Chris Bryant, etc. They said from the 208, if you're going to drop that type of money, why not just bring back Kyle Seager for that $20 million option?
Really?
That's what this... I'm reading the question.
Because
Chris
Bryant is better than Kyle Seager at that price point.
I know Kyle Seager has been great in terms of home runs and RBIs, but batting average does matter. Getting on base, being a viable guy to score runs, I mean, that stuff is important, and I know Kyle's been awesome in terms of runs and runners in scoring position, and I'm not just overlooking that, but in terms of his value, I think that you can get a better player if you're willing to shell out $20 million plus. I think that there's better, younger options for this team.
Who will be the Mariners' all-star representatives in 2023? Let's look deep into the future. You'd sure hope Julio and Kelnick are two of those, certainly. I mean, it's your rebuild's working out if those two are all-stars in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be. But the one guy that I really have a lot of confidence will be there is Julio Rodriguez. I mean, do you see what he's doing in AA right now? What are his stats in AA? Like, what?
It's absurd. He's like over 370.
He is killing it. Like, killing it. If there was, I don't know what the rules are. I don't think they apply anymore, but there was the old rules that you could bring, you know, some of those guys up without any penalty. Their clock didn't start. I would absolutely bring up Julio Rodriguez right now if it didn't mean starting his clock. I mean, he's been that unbelievably good.
He's down to 351.
Oh, pathetic.
Yeah. I
Send
oversold
him back down.
Such a
Send
slump.
Him back down.
446 on base, 16 stolen bases, a 1020 OPS. At the age of 20. He's like 6'5 and like 220 pounds.
God.
He will be the number one prospect in all of baseball heading into this next year. Guarantee it.
All right, that'll do it for us today, you guys. Huge game for the Mariners tonight, a chance to win the series. Tyler Anderson on the mound. Pregame shows at 6 p.m., first pitch at 7:10. That'll do it for Jake and Stacey today. Wyman and Bob heading your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Jared Ferguson, it's a funny name.